OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
During the pandemic, governments eased regulations on restaurants and healthcare. Now, states are trying to decide which rules to go by in the future.
The question isn't whether we're going to keep the pandemic era rules, but it's going to be how do we make sure that this is done safely?
And President Biden is pushing up the vaccination timeline, but are states ready? Plus, those at-home pandemic haircuts are now your barber's problem. It's Tuesday, April 6th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. President Biden says the administration is speeding up the timeline for the COVID-19 vaccine rollout. All U.S. adults should be eligible by April 19th, almost 2 weeks earlier than expected. Every state but Hawaii has said it will be able to meet the timeline. At a press conference at the White House today, Biden also announced that the U.S. has administered 150 million COVID-19 shots since he took office. But the president urged Americans to continue taking precautions.
The virus is spreading because we have too many people who, seeing the end in sight, think we're at the finish line already. But let me be deadly earnest with you. We aren't at the finish line. We still have a lot of work to do. We're still in a life and death race against this virus.
The U.S. reported more than 79,000 new cases for Monday, according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. In more than half of the states, the 7-day average of newly reported cases is higher than the 14-day average, indicating that infections are rising. Meanwhile, California says it plans to fully reopen its economy on June 15th if they have enough vaccine supply for everyone 16 and older, and if hospitalizations in the state remain low. The announcement is a testament to the dramatic turnaround in the state. California is seeing an average of 5 new COVID-19 cases per 100,000 residents a week. That's down from a peak of more than 100 in January. The International Monetary Fund has raised its global growth forecast, anticipating the world economy to expand by 6% this year, the fastest pace in at least 4 decades. The U.S. and China are driving that recovery as vaccine rollouts ramp up and spending rises. After contracting last year, the IMF now expects the U.S. economy to grow by 6.4% this year and projects that China will expand by 8.4%. The IMF says the recovery will be less robust in emerging markets and developing economies. And baseball card maker Topps is getting in on the SPAC craze. Topps is known for its bazooka gum as well as its trading cards. The company has also been marketing sports and entertainment digital collectibles through apps since 2012. Now it's going public through a combination with a special purpose acquisition company, Mudrick Capital, in a deal worth $1.16 billion. It's fueled in part by the potential for Topps to expand into the hot non-fungible token or NFT market. NFTs use the technology behind cryptocurrencies to create unique tokens that serve as digital deeds for original items. Coming up after the break, will pandemic rules survive in a post-pandemic world?
NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Over the past year, regulations governing everything from takeout to virtual doctor's visits were rolled back to help businesses survive and keep consumers safe. Now, tougher questions are emerging around which rules to bring back and which to say goodbye to for good. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau reporter Aaron Zitner. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Aaron, a range of services have shifted their business online, and one of the big ones is healthcare. Telehealth did exist before the pandemic, but was much more restricted. What kind of regulations were changed during the pandemic that opened it up more widely?
Coronavirus prompted governments at all levels, federal and state, to change the rules around health care to make sure that people could get health care without having to go into a doctor's office all the time. On the federal level, prior to the pandemic, Medicare would only cover telehealth services for a very limited number of people. You had to live in a certain rural area, and you couldn't even access telehealth from your home in most cases. You had to go to an approved facility, and then you would use video conferencing to talk to your doctor. When the pandemic came, Congress allowed Medicare to greatly expand telehealth, and now people in all geographies can use telehealth, and they can use it from their homes. On the state level, there were also a lot of changes. States regulate healthcare very tightly. You need to be licensed if you're a health worker, doctor, nurse, physician assistant in your state. And a lot of states said, you know what, for the time being, while there's the pandemic, if you're licensed in any state, you can come into our state with certain restrictions and provide health care, because we think, you know, if you're licensed somewhere, then you're going to be good enough for emergency purposes to come in and work here. So for the time of the pandemic, those rules have been lifted. And now the decision is whether to make those rules permanent and keep those changes on the books going forward.
Right. And it seems like telehealth has been hugely beneficial. So what are some of the challenges or hesitancies about making this widening of telehealth services a permanent change in the industry?
Well, on the federal level, there's a lot of concerns around cost. Medicare is a hugely expensive program. It's a big part of the United States economy. If someone who was going to go in and see a doctor replaces that visit with a telehealth visit, that could be a cost savings to Medicare. It might cost less to provide that visit by video rather than in person. You know, you don't need a waiting room and you don't need transportation. But if telehealth ends up adding visits because they're so much more convenient, it could add costs to Medicare. So that's one of the questions Congress is sorting through. On the state level, a lot of healthcare providers were saying, hey, I'm a therapist, I'm a psychologist, I have a family I work with. The dad lives in Virginia, the mom lives in Maryland, the kid goes to school in the District of Columbia, and I can't get all of us on the phone during the day or on a video conference because I'm only licensed in my one state, and I'm not allowed to practice with people in other states. So there's a push to come up with mechanisms to allow people to practice across state lines. But as we do this, there are concerns about privacy. Is the technology that we're using going to protect patient privacy? There are concerns about billing fraud and billing abuse. And there are concerns about making sure that someone who's in one state is properly trained and licensed to up to the standards of another state. One other thing in healthcare that surprised me as a reporter was the importance of the telephone, because we all use the telephone and it's old technology. But during the pandemic, rules were put in place that made sure that providers in a lot of cases could get paid for talking to patients on the phone and get paid at rates that were equivalent to an in-office visit. This is very important for people who don't have access to computers, who are on the wrong side of the digital divide, or who may be visually impaired, or maybe they are very young. Maybe we're talking about serving young children who can't sit in front of the computer for a long time, or maybe people who are on the autistic spectrum and are not good at working with visual cues that we get.
Let's turn to the restaurant industry. This was one of the hardest hit sectors during the pandemic, and the industry really pivoted to pickup and delivery when indoor dining was shut down, with some even offering cocktails to go. This is another change that some now want to make permanent. Aaron, who is pushing back on this?
Before the pandemic hit, we'd all been introduced to Uber Eats and other apps, Grubhub, that allow us to just use our smartphones or our computers to have food delivered to our door, and it was a convenience. Then the pandemic came along, and restaurants really got into trouble. We all know that that industry was very hard hit, and so restaurants were saying, hey, let us serve customers remotely. Let us sell alcohol. Let us sell cocktails to go. Let us sell bottles of liquor and have those delivered. You know, in some states, a truck that delivered groceries could not deliver alcohol. And many states, most states, barred restaurants from selling alcohol to go. But when you change the rules like this, you create winners and losers. The restaurants that are struggling gain a new customers by selling cocktails to go. But a liquor store down the road that might sell six packs of beer to folks stopping on their way home from work might be losing business. And a lot of Liquor stores and package stores and convenience stores have been uneasy with the expansion of alcohol sales from restaurants and have been pushing back to make sure that this liberalizing of the rules isn't permanent.
Aaron, are you finding that the debate over whether or not to keep these regulations is falling along party lines in any way? Are there some states, for example, that are more willing to change than others in terms of some of these regulations rolling back?
Well, rolling back regulations is kind of more in the Republican DNA than the Democratic DNA. It's part of the party's brand. But we're finding that both parties really are taking a serious look at what regulations we really need. We've just had this real-world natural experiment in regulations, what's needed and what we might be able to live without. And both parties, governors, senators of both parties, are taking a real look at where they can scale back.
Overall, Aaron, you looked at a lot of areas across industries where easing regulations got people thinking about what should revert back and what might be better staying this way post-pandemic. What did you learn from diving into all of these altered regulations?
Well, in a lot of ways, the world was really ready for change. Just a few years ago, not everyone had Wi-Fi. And even if the word Zoom and video conference is new to us, now more of us have laptops and computers and the infrastructure to use video conferencing. And now we all have smartphones, and so we have apps on our phones that allow for food delivery. So the world was kind of poised to move more online. And then coronavirus came along, and it required social distancing, and it required the government to think about steps that might help businesses stay in business and do business more efficiently under the conditions of the pandemic. And so the world was kind of ready for this reexamination of where technology can be put to use to get people goods and services, whether it's alcohol or mental health therapy or getting a document notarized, and where it's appropriate to allow this to happen online. And in a lot of cases, the question isn't whether we're going to keep the pandemic era rules, but it's going to be, how do we make sure that this is done safely? How do we protect patient privacy? So some things will probably go back. And for others, the question will be, how can we keep the world that we came to know during the pandemic, but keep it safely? And what should the rules be for these new online services?
That's Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau reporter Aaron Zitner. Aaron, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, pleasure to be with you, Annemarie.
And finally, the past year has changed the idea of self-care. Instead of salon visits and spa days, we've had at-home haircuts, DIY pedicures, and off-the-shelf waxing treatments. It hasn't been pretty. Now that barbershops, hair, and nail salons are back in business, professionals are being called in to fix all those bad haircuts, irritated skin, and in some cases, burns, sometimes requiring longer appointments or multiple visits. But the long wait is turning the tables on the service industry. And our reporter, Rachel Ensign, says clients are showing their personal care professionals the love.
So they are finding that tips are way up pretty much across the board, and clients just are so happy to be back that they're bringing them gifts. They're telling them that they've never appreciated them this much before. And I think it's really a combination of just this routine thing, getting a haircut or getting your nails done, that you did all the time just became impossible for a while. So it's novel still, and people are so glad to be back and just so glad to see folks.
And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Annemarie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.